Welcome to Does the Team Think? With Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Cyril Fletcher, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards. And team, here comes a question from Mr. Stephen Wiley. Hello, Mr. Wiley. Welcome to the program. What's your question?
My question is, will long-tailed shirts ever come back? And does the team miss them? And are there any other recent changes in men's fashion that the team regret?
Mr. Stephen Wiley's question is, will long-tailed shirts ever come back? And does the team miss them? And are there any other recent changes in men's fashions that the team regrets?
A thrifty young fellow of Shoreham made brown paper trousers and wore them. He looked nice and neat till he bent in the street to pick up a pin and he tore them.
Arthur.
Hello there.
Hello, dear.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, long-tailed shirts have never gone out.
Mine went out this morning.
Get it?
I hope it'll come back.
Well, no, you see, when I was a choir boy in 1800 and frozen to death,
You couldn't be frozen to death with a long-tailed shirt.
I'm coming to the joke. I always had to wear Eton suits, as choir boys did in those days. And they were known as bum freezers. Right. You remember? I had to wear a long-tailed shirt in any case. Otherwise, I wouldn't have got my bottom notes.
Isn't this programme dull without me?
No, we're rather enjoying it. But what I find is an interesting question is because they are beginning to economise on the length of tails on shirts. I find that they're selling you shirts now that if you lean back to laugh, your stomach pops out. I really do. You know, they
yours does. Say, am I?
That's all right if it's a naval occasion.
Yeah. I went to a health farm the other day. And it
doesn't
wasn't a health
show
farm at all. It was a nudist camp.
Oh, I see.
And the chap who answered the door, I would have expected him to be Starkers, wouldn't you? Not on your Nelly. He had a little black plastic apron with sequin windmills on it. I couldn't take my eyes off the sequin windmills. I said, why in a nudist camp do you wear a black plastic apron? He said, I'm the cook. I said, well, why? Why, I said, does a cook wear a black plastic apron in a nudist camp? He said, have you ever fried sausages?
Ted Ray, have you answered the question, actually?
I'll tell you something. If they stop making shirt tails, my shirt maker will be furious. His name is Hoffman. One thing about long-tailed shirts, I remember my mother, when my collars and cuffs started to wear, off came the tail of the shirt to repair it. And then she had to get any material she could to stitch back on. I've often walked around with the sitting room curtains round me behind. But you know, when I was a little tiny baby in Liverpool, my mother couldn't afford to make me underpants, so she made me underpants out of sandpaper, and I roughed it for 4 years.
You roughed it?
Would you like to finish on the joke?
What are we...
I thought you'd gone home, Arthur.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Well, it's about the fellow and his wife. They went to celebrate their golden wedding anniversary, and they went to the same hotel and stayed in the same hotel and booked the same bedroom, and there was a dance going on downstairs, and they got a bit tired, so they went up to bed, and just as he got down to his long-tailed shirt, she said, oh, heavens, I've left my handbag in the ballroom. So he said, don't worry, love. This is character work I'm doing now. Don't worry, love. I'll go and get it for you. She said, no, go like that. But he'd gone. Anyway, he came up a few minutes later, and he got her handbag, and she was crying. He said, what on earth are you crying for? I've got your bag. She said, you imagine, when we go downstairs in the morning, all the people who are in the ballroom will point us out and say, there was that man who... Oh, no, he said, they won't know it was me. I pulled my shirt up over my head.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Stephen Wiley. Thank you. And now, team, you're going to hear a question from Mrs. Bobby Kennard. Mrs. Kennard, welcome to the programme. Got your question there?
Yes.
Let's hear it.
Does the team think there is such a thing as perfect bliss? And how would they achieve it?
Does the team think there is such a thing as perfect bliss? And how would they achieve it?
My idea of perfect bliss is eating crisps under an electric blanket.
And then you're the toast of the town.
Then you've had your chips. But
Arthur.
Well, of course, who was the great poet who said...
Me.
A loaf, a flask of wine, and thou.
Omar Khayyam.
Was it Omakayam?
Omakayam, yes.
He means Hovis, a small port, and Rita Webb. But anyway, lying out in the... Can you imagine? It's all right having a loaf and a flask of wine and thou, but in the middle of a desert, can you imagine it?
Well, there's nothing... A jug of wine.
Well, it reminds me of my very famous song. It's a hell of a life in the Legion, though I hardly had time to detect it, for I'd sand in my nostrils and sand in my ears and sand where you'd never expect it. And a flask of wine and thou.
Jimmy, would you like to try and answer the question?
Well, my idea of perfect bliss is to go out on Saturday night on the... Well, you know what I'm talking about.
Well, you don't know what bliss is until you get married, and by God, then it's too late.
The young think that listening to the top 20 is perfect bliss, don't they?
They do.
If they're the top 20, what are the bottom 20 like?
The bottom 20 is Jimmy in a Turkish bar.
There's an advert on television now, and there's a man smoking a cigar... and says it's perfect bliss. Well, now, Ted's smoking one of these cigars at the moment, and it smells like a tram driver's glove.
I thought perfect bliss was my theatrical landlady, because every time she was cooking, she used to sing, "Nearer, my God, to thee." And I said, "Are you especially religious?" And she said, "Good heavens, no. But by the end of the third verse, I know that the eggs are soft-boiled, and by the end of the fifth verse, I know they're hard-boiled."
I've been in those digs, Cyril. You're quite right. Everything she served was a sacrifice or a burnt offering.
What Mrs. Kennard is asking us is how we achieve perfect bliss. And so far, all I've achieved is a lot of old jokes.
Oh, Jim, you know perfectly well that your feeling of bliss is to ride a polo pony through a river of beer.
Stout fellow.
What's yours, Arthur? Your idea of perfect bliss?
Well, I think to lie in bed on a Sunday morning with your breakfast tray and the Sunday papers, listening to the church bells...
I know that Sunday paper.
Haven't you? Saying to your little friend, "Are you sure your husband won't be back till Tuesday?"
And I know that paper too, Scoutmaster acquitted. Yes, I know.
Let me just take you up about the Sunday papers, Arthur, because what I find about the Sunday papers is, particularly if you read them all, which I do... is that you have to wash your hands about four times.
True.
If only they...
They're so dirty, the news of the world in particular.
Anyway,
Another thing I would just like to ask if anybody else has the same thing. I have an allergy to the newsprint, and after about the fourth page of the News of the World, I start sneezing.
Mm. That's funny. Gray used to do that. He wrote Gray's Allergy. Do you remember?
That's right.
In a country churchyard.
Mrs. Kennard, what is your idea of perfect bliss?
Well, here am I, a widow, in my 60s, with plenty of vitality still left in me.
How's
and
your
I'm
money?
Still hoping.
Good for you. I'll get you a long-tailed shirt.
How are you fixed for trading stamps? I'll be round on Wednesday.
You haven't got much chance here. It's only Jim that's not married.
Well, I was going to say, speaking as the only unattached member of the team, what's your name and number, madam?
I'll tell you something, you know, getting back to my wife.
You're always doing that.
Well, not often enough, unfortunately. But getting back to my wife, I will tell you this has never been told on the air. We have never been married. We have never been married, no. And I said to her the other day, "Why don't we get married?" She said, "Well, who'd have us?"
Thank you very much, Demon. Thank you, Mrs. Bobby Kennard. Team, this question is put to you by Mrs. E.N. Hobbs. Mrs. Hobbs, welcome to the programme. What's your question?
If members of the team retired to a council bungalow with a small garden, which varieties of flowers and vegetables would they try to grow?
If members of the team retired to a council bungalow with a small garden, which variety of flowers and vegetables would they try to grow?
What I resent in Mrs. Hobbs' question is that she says, would they try to grow?
Ah.
Well, of course we could grow them quite easily. I don't know whether you know, Mrs. Hobbs, but I do a television gardening programme once a fortnight.
Only in the Midlands.
I spoke to your viewer the other day.
So I will proceed to give you the advice that you desire. First of all, if you have a very small space, you're obviously going to use all the walls of your bungalow for fruit, figs, plums, peaches, cherries, loganberries and blackberries. Then for vegetables, you'll have peas, beans, carrots, swedes, turnips, radishes, lettuce, leeks, onions, sprouts, marrows, cabbages, spinach, cauliflowers, artichokes, asparagus, mint, chives, parsley, lad's love and basil.
And oh, is flowers.
Oh, basil!
I've got a funny flowers. You're going to have chrysanthemums, nice, dented, dock, love, large bean, hollyhocks, pinks, poppies, pyrethrums, pelargoniums, pansies, penstemons and rhubarb.
Yes, this is so nice.
Or it has taken it out of me.
You mustn't put basil amongst the pansies.
Mrs. Hobbs may have some ideas for you. Mrs. Hobbs, what do you grow in your own garden?
Honeysuckle and geraniums and...
Hollyhocks.
Fuchsias.
I'm not coming to lunch in your place.
You said fuchsias, honeysuckle, and geraniums. Fuchsias, honeysuckle and geraniums.
There's no fuchsias in
but
that.
But what about the vegetables? Do you have room for vegetables?
Yes, yellow tomatoes.
Yellow tomatoes?
Those are the ones who won't
yellow?
Fight.
Yellow?
Yeah, they won't fight.
Why do you grow yellow tomatoes, madam?
She's Chinese husband.
Ladies are supposed to be the best gardeners, not gents. I mean, Eve, in the first place, grew a lovely apple for Adam, didn't she? Well, I used to go out with a girl called Sabrina. Well, she hadn't got any apples, but she had a lovely pear.
You're always bringing her into this programme. You still haven't got over it.
Just Jimmy Edwards, have you ever tried to have a vegetable garden and grow anything?
I've tried to get to nature. I've tried to get to one with nature.
I saw you in the doorway.
I've tried. I mean, I'm very fond of parsnips.
Only you and me.
I'm very fond of parsnips.
Parsnips?
But unfortunately, they're what we call in our family shirt raisers. And...
Open back to the long tails again.
Yes. That's... And now we probably know why they've cut the tails short these days. But
because parsnips.
The trouble with... You see, I'm one of those people who want instant results. I want to put the seed in tonight
and
see the parsnip there tomorrow.
I know.
But unfortunately, nature doesn't work like that.
No. I live in possibly...
We know where you live.
I live in possibly the most aristocratic, beautiful road.
It's a funny little village, possibly.
In the whole of North London.
In the whole of North London.
And what a hole it is.
Now, mine is the fourth mortgage on the right. And I thought I would save a few pennies, you know, by doing my own gardening. And so I went out one morning bravely, gave up the golf for once, went out with a spade on my shoulder, and the chap next door to me, very, very posh, retired bank manager, keeps waving a red ink bottle at me every morning. And he leaned over the fence and he said, "I shouldn't do that, old boy." I said, "What am I doing wrong with my spade on my shoulder?" He said, "Well, they think you're in for a dig, you know."
Jimmy.
You did hear about the fellow.
Let my four fans applaud, please.
Jim, I wanted to ask you, the question also included flowers. What is your favourite flower?
My favourite...
Cauliflower.
Jim, what is your favourite flower?
My favourite flowers are leaves, actually.
And yours, Arthur Askey.
Well, it must be the rose. I mean, all the great poets of all time have always written chiefly about the rose. I mean, there's roses are shining in Picardy. Rose of England, rose in the bud. No rose in all the world.
That was a cod.
And then there's Cod's Rose and Clarkson Rose and all the roses.
I would settle
for a rose.
Cyril Fletcher.
I've got a lupin named after me, old woman. There is a Betty Astell lupin if you want to go and get one. She's very beautiful, she's very pink and she's a good bedder.
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mrs. Hobbs. Thank you very much indeed. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to meet our special guest, a lady who's used to working with comics because she's that pillar of television comedy, actress, comedian and impressionist, the lady from Who Do You Do?, Janet Brown. Welcome to the programme. Have a seat. Are you yourself tonight?
I am myself.
Splendid. Then, Janet Brown, in person, will you put your question, please?
Thank you. I like accents very much. But does the team think having an accent is an advantage or a drawback?
Does the team think having an accent is an advantage or a drawback?
All right, let me ask Janet the question. Now, from one of the finest impressionists in show business, I want to know whether you mean the question to be a permanent accent that you have all the time, or something that you can put on like a dirty Mac or something, you know?
Watch it.
Well, dirty Mac.
Oh, that's very quick. That's very good, yes. Yes, answer that.
Well, please. Probably I was thinking, tying it up with the theatre, really, because, you see, at one time I would have thought having an accent was a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But now it seems to me when anybody walks on stage, Cilla Black or somebody, and says, "Excuse me, but you know who I am," everybody loves it because...
Isn't that great? Did you get that? Wasn't that just like George Alice?
I'll tell you what...
Marlon and Dietrich.
Jimmy, if you had an accent, which...
I have an accent.
How would you describe your accent?
I would say, funnily enough, you should ask this. An American asked me this one day. It was in a lift in Hong Kong, which is an awfully good place to have a conversation.
What were you doing, pulling a rickshaw or something?
No, an American said to me, "That's a cute accent you got there." He said, "What kind of an accent do you call that?" And I said, "You have the accent, sir. This is English."
Very good, yeah.
Thank you, Jennifer. Oh, not yet.
No,
I thought you were going to say.
We're still with Jennifer.
Thank you.
The funny thing is... Oh, I beg your pardon, Jim.
Well, it's a serious development to this discussion, actually, because a lot of people have changed their normal accent, the accent with which they were born, in order to do whatever it is they have to do.
Mm.
But you'll find that in moments of stress or anxiety or anger... people nearly always revert to what they were born with.
That's quite right. And Arthur's... I wish I could.
Liverpudlian, no doubt comes out when he's knocking people about.
Yes.
And you're Ted. When you have a fight with Sybil, I'll bet you talk a terrible Liverpudlian.
Well, it is a very strange thing, but a lot of people who haven't meet me for the first time think that I'm a colonial. I have a sort of, and I use the word correctly, a bastardised accent, because along the way, I picked up a bit of this, a bit of that, and some of them were nice. Expensive, but nice. But, you know, the thing is, that it does, as Janet will tell you, putting an accent into a story, well, of course, it enhances a story to a tremendous extent.
Oh, yeah.
It's not good if you're saying, like, the little kid comes home one day, and his mother says, "Yes?" And he said, "Mummy, a policeman will be calling shortly." And she says, "Why you do this to me? Why you get in the trouble?
Spanish.
I've been a good woman for you. I've been your mother and fed you and clothed you. Why do you do this to me?" He says, "Mummy, why are you talking like that? We're Welsh."
Cyril Fletcher. There was
an actor in stock drama and he was playing the king. And he said, "Come, let's go into the house." The chap in the front row said, "I say, did you hear that?" He said, "Else." And the king walks down to the footlights and he said, "Yes, of course I said else. Where do you think a king would live, in an apartment?"
I would like, while we've got her here, Mac, surely we can't let Janet go without giving us one or two lovely voices of hers.
I'm sure she will, if you ask her nicely.
I love people with strong accents. I mean, Hilda Baker. I mean, I love when she said, "Ladies and gentlemen, just being here with all these lovely people tonight fills me with neuralgia."
Very good. Janet, which is your favourite voice? I mean, of those that you impersonate?
I love strong voices. Catherine Hepburn's I like very much.
Do Catherine Hepburn.
Well, of course, if Catherine Hepburn was here in the studio, she would just love to tell everybody how marvellous and how absolutely wonderful and terrific they are.
There you go. I have a favourite accent.
Jack Benny again.
A fellow said to me one day first went to Blackpool, and he said, "Where are you staying?" And I said, "I'm staying in St. Andrews." He said, You'll find them very cooked glass up there," he says.
Well, that's very, very descriptive, isn't it? Cooked glass, you see? It means like people, like the people next door to us, they were snobbish. They were so toffee-nosed. There's another one, you see, like cut glass. Toffee-nosed. Do you know they had fruit on the sideboard when nobody was ill?
Thank you very much, and thank you, Janet Brown. Thank you, Janet Brown. And now, team, a question is going to be put to you by Mr. Mark Chivers.
Does the team agree with the song, "It's nice to get up in the morning when the sun begins to shine"? And are they actually good get-uppers?
Does the team agree with the song, it's nice to get up in the morning when the sun begins to shine, and are they good get-uppers?
Could I just correct the gentleman? It is actually get-us-up.
Well, you know, this is the business about getting up in the morning. I think it all depends on the weather, Mr. Chivers, to give you for once a serious answer. Because I like this programme. I like coming on with my chums. I like interfering. I like it when Jimmy sulks. I hate it when Arthur tops my gags. And, of course, Sybil... Cecil!
Oh, it's out at last.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Now, put it back! It all depends on the weather. It's the time of the year when the sun comes shining through, you know, that lovely through that hole in the wall. Warm weather, spring weather. I can't wait to get out on
That's
the golf
That's what
course.
I was going to say, Mr. Chivers. You see, you only said the
Mr.
first
Mr. Shivers.
Shivers.
Chivers.
Shivers my timbers.
What do you say, Chivers or Chivers? You say Chivers. That's right. There
he,
you
wasn't, he wasn't born. His mama laid him.
He went. And he went all jelly, didn't you? But anyway...
And these jokes are giving him the pip.
Arthur!
Mr. Chivers says... What is it? It's nice to get up in the morning when the sun begins... But don't forget the second half of that song.
But it's best to stay.
But when the snow is snowing and it's murky overhead...
OK! Oh,
it's nice to get up in the morning, but it's nice to lay in your bed.
That's it.
Arthur, do you realise you did a perfect Scottish accent then?
And when the snow... Well, I knew all Harry Lauder's songs, you know.
I think we spend far too much time in bed, as a matter of fact. I think as a nation we are...
You're getting older, dear.
Almost what you might call bed-bound.
It's better than egg-bound, anyway.
But they're using eggs in the marriage service in Scotland because they're more binding. Did you know that?
Well, there's only one thing that really absolutely forces me to get out of bed in the morning.
What's that?
Well, I need hardly tell you.
What is it known as opening
the
time?
The call of nature, it's called.
Yeah.
Same thing.
There's no doubt about it that dawn... Dawn is the most attractive time of the day if you can be bothered to make a date with it. Dawn comes up over the horizon, the larks rise into the sky.
Yes, and the owls play twit with the cock-a-doodle-doo.
No, the owls have gone to bed. What are you talking about?
Owls have gone to bed?
Of course, when it comes light, owls go to bed, you know.
Do they?
And the cocks crow.
Mr. Chivers.
I must tell you this. A fellow, a cowman, lived opposite me, and he had these cockerels, you see. And they were all going, "Ick, ick, ew," and all that. But one of them, it was a little later, and it used to wake up in the morning and go, "Oh." It was only half cock, if you know what I mean.
Mr. Chivers, are you a good getter-upper?
Not now, because I'm retired.
You passed it.
Yeah, I passed it.
So you're not a good getter-upper?
Well, I often get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I open the bedroom window and climb in.
Mr. Chivers, you said you
were... The worst thing is really, I suppose, getting up in the winter, you see.
Winter I get up at night and have to dress by candlelight.
Quiet, Janet Brown.
Summer, quiet.
Get on with it.
I started too high.
Easy now. Now, Miss Sally, if you please sing a scale for me.
Sing it again.
Till I get up at night and have to dress in summer,
get off,
the other way. I have to go to bed by day. To go to bed by day. To go to bed by day.
Oh, God, man.
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mr. Chivers. Thank you.
Very funny.
Bobby Lane is the questioner who will put this question to you.
When and where do the team do their best thinking?
You're taking a great risk, Bobby. When and where do the team do their best thinking?
Well, of course, obviously, about an hour after opening time, just by the fire. That's where I do my best drinking. Oh, thinking, is it? I'm so sorry, madam. I thought you were back to my favourite subject again. I think too much time is spent thinking, darling. There's not a lot of future in it, you know. It'll do you no good.
little, do you know? Don't think, just act.
Well, it hasn't done badly for us after 15 years.
You haven't got a thought in your head, just a memory.
You ask me, anything, any joke, any stuff, I will do it now.
Yes, rhubarb.
Let us stick up yourself.
That's it. Cenopods.
Thinking in a
way. A very moving thought.
I knew you'd say
that. Cyril Fletcher. Thinking in a way is concentration, isn't it? And a very good example of concentration is doing your child's homework while he watches the telly.
I do cogitate, if that's a better word, I think.
I know, I've seen you.
I cogitate.
I remember Harry Tate.
And it is the hour. It is the hour between waking and deciding to get up and do something about happening.
Cyril Fletcher. Well, in the bath, you see, and there was this girl.
Oh, you said that for a plug.
No, not at all. This girl called Bertha Bite, who, sitting in her bath one night, lost the sponge, then murmured, "Cool, my soap's gone down the plug hole too." Then, stooping down, she pressed her beak against the plug hole, so to speak. At last, hope gone, she tried to rise and found her annoyed surprise, her long and somewhat bulbous snout had got stuck inside the plug hole spout. And though she tried with might and main, she couldn't get it out again. She struggled till her nose grew numb, then gave it up and called for mum. Her ma peered in with specs disranged and said, "Lumio, your face has changed." "Poor Bertha, cramped for want of space," said Gumby Darth, "it's not my face. The end that you can see, our vow, should be down here with my noses now." Her mother, much relieved, just laughed. That's a mother laughing. Then grabbed her daughter fore and aft with one foot just against the geezer.
Come back, team. It'll be over in a minute. Come back.
At last, exhausted Mrs. B said, "Cheer up, Jack, I'll make some tea. And with a stirrup pump and jug, I'll squirt it to you up the plug."
Thank you, Cyril Fletcher. We'll let you know. Team, I think it might be nice if we heard from Bobby Lane. Bobby, where do you do your best thinking?
Instead of counting sheep, I find it easier.
Where?
In bed. I'm sorry.
Can you afford to count sheep with the price of lamb today?
How many sheep do you have in your bed?
Well, she has flock in the mattress.
Very wicked.
So it's like the vicar who... There was a new scoutmistress came to the village and he was thinking of her quite a lot. And he met her the following morning. He said to her, "Do you know I prayed for you last night?" She said, "Oh, you should have given me a ring. I'd have been round in a flash."
Thank you very much, Dean, and thank you very much, Bobby Lane. And there, I'm afraid, we must close Does the Team Think for today. On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Ted Ray, Arthur Askin, Cyril Fletcher, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners and, of course, our special guest, Janet Brown. And we hope you'll all join us the next time we're on the air. Till then, this is MacDonald Hobley saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.